Welcome to Power Play. I'm Evan Solomon. Today on the program, breaking news, a deadly shooting near a synagogue in Vienna, Austria. We will get you the latest on that. And then the final showdown.
Tomorrow we are going to win this state, and we are going to win 4 more years in our great White House.
I don't care how much Donald Trump tries. There's nothing he's going to do to stop the people in this nation from voting.
Trump and Biden make their final pitches to Americans. Where are the final battle lines, and what could it mean for you at home? We've got special coverage for you today. The former New Jersey governor and the Trump advisor, Chris Christie, joins us in a few moments. And then the CTV Washington bureau chief, Joy Malvin, on the last-ditch campaign efforts. Plus, America votes. What will spill over into Canada?
We will be watching this, as are other Canadians, to see how it unfolds. So we'll make sure that we are monitoring the facts on the ground and making sure that Canadians and our space is safe and secure here and across the country.
All right. What happens if the results are contested? Could there be widespread violence? How will the election impact this country? Can you trust the polls? Lots of questions. We'll dig into that with an all-star press gallery for you to break it all down. Everything you need to know ahead of Election Day, the former U.S. ambassador to Canada, Bruce Hayman, is here. Pollster Nick Nanos is also here. So let's get to it. This is Power Play. Let's get to the players. All right, we're following breaking news out of Vienna, Austria right now. Several people have been injured after shots were fired near a synagogue. It's 10 in the evening local time there. Police are still responding to the incident, first reported around 8 p.m. local time this evening. The synagogue was already closed at the time of the shooting. Authorities are advising the public to stay away from the inner city district in Vienna, as well as public places and public transport. The head of Austria's Jewish community says it's not clear if the synagogue was actually targeted. As we said, it was already closed when the shots were fired. Now, we will continue to follow this story. The Interior Minister of Austria has said this is a, quote, apparent act of terror. Let's go now to Jean Meserve, CTV News international security expert. She's in Washington today. Good to have you here. Obviously, it's a fluid situation there. What do the initial reports tell you about the attack?
Well, very fluid and very chaotic at the moment. As you mentioned, the authorities are characterizing this as a terrorist attack. It is unclear at this point how many places were attacked. Certainly, the initial reports were that the attack was on the street where the main synagogue in Vienna is, but it's unclear, as you mentioned, whether the synagogue or its offices were in fact a target. But there have been reports since then of other attack locations. Unclear exactly where they are and whether they're the result of the gunmen who were involved in the first attack moving or whether they were simultaneous timed attack intended to go off at the same time. As you reported, there are reports of casualties and reports of deaths. The numbers are very fluid, very hard to pin down at this point, although the head of the Jewish community in Vienna has said that no members of the Jewish community appear to have been victims at this point in time. One attacker, reports are, has been killed. There were likely other attackers, whether one or more, we aren't certain at this time. There, again, is a lot of conflicting information. Some reports are saying that others have been taken into custody. There's some video online which would seem to suggest that, but it's unconfirmed. Let me say that this follows on the heels of several attacks in France over the last couple of weeks, and it also happens to coincide with the reimposition of lockdown in Austria in result of the coronavirus. One report that I saw said that the lockdown was scheduled to go into effect in just a couple of hours, and so restaurants in that area would have been fairly crowded and therefore rich with potential targets for whoever these gunmen might have been. Back to you.
Yeah, so just real quick in the last couple seconds, what's unsettling is that this does not seem to be, quote, a lone gunman situation. What do you want to hear from authorities now then about motive and who's involved here?
Well, there have been reports that some or one of the gunmen were yelling, Allahu Akbar, indicating that they may have been of Muslim descent, but that's only an indication. We will want to know how many there were. We'll want to know how they were armed. We want to know where they came from, and we want to know what their connections may be, both inside Austria and beyond the borders of Austria, to find out if this has been directed from somewhere else or with this, whether this is a plot that was hatched in Vienna or nearby.
All right. Yeah, we're watching this closely again. We'll update the story if we get any more news. Gene Meserve, our CTV international security expert, great to have you on the program to fill us in on the details. Thanks so much. Meantime, let's look south. After $14 billion spent, this is by far the most expensive U.S. election in history, after months of campaigning, after debates, nasty allegations of corruption, it's the middle of a raging pandemic. It is finally here. Election day in the U.S., Trump versus Biden. Now, polls show Biden is in the lead, but Donald Trump says a red wave is coming and you shouldn't trust the polls. What is the path to victory for each side? And who do, you know, almost 100 million advance voters really serve? Can the president pull out another win in the Rust Belt states? Will he concede if he doesn't? To dig into all that, let's bring in someone who knows the inner workings of the 2020 Trump campaign very well, the former New Jersey governor, Chris Christie, been a close Trump advisor. He coached Donald Trump in the key debates. He fought against him 5 years ago in the primaries. He recently recovered from COVID-19, which is a good thing. Governor Christie, good to see you healthy and good to see you in New Jersey. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
We're just, I guess, hours away. Candidates are making this furious final stop in key battleground states, Pennsylvania, Florida, Arizona, Wisconsin. Donald Trump says he's seen a red wave. I mean, you know it. Is there a red wave? What's his path to victory here?
I think he is closing what was a race that was in a comfortable margin for Joe Biden into being a very close race for tomorrow night. The president will end up tonight in Grand Rapids, Michigan, where he ended up 4 years ago. With a midnight rally when no one thought he had any chance of winning Michigan. He won Michigan. He won Wisconsin. He won Ohio. He won Pennsylvania. And as a result, he won the presidency. So I think the path is very similar for the president. This time, if he's going to win, he's got to win Arizona, Georgia, Florida, North Carolina, and Pennsylvania. Those are the states your viewers should watch tomorrow night.
Yeah, and we're looking at it. Chris Christie is this 2016. I mean, it's a different ballgame, as you know. We're in the middle of a pandemic. I mean, if he has a run on all that, it would be, you know, once again, the polls would be blown out of the water. What are the, like, what's the realistic picture that you think could happen?
I think it'll be close. I think if he loses any of those states, he'll lose them by very small margins. I think it's difficult to compare 16 and 20 because of the pandemic and what the pandemic has wrought. We have more early voting in the U.S. and more mail-in voting in the U.S. than ever before in our country's history. And so it's very difficult to poll that and to gauge it. And you don't know how many people have already, who were going to vote in an election, they've already voted, or if they're new voters. So it's very tough to gauge. But I can tell you, you see enthusiasm, momentum on the president's side, but you also see a significant lead that Vice President Biden had coming into, let's say, the last presidential debate. But I think since the last presidential debate, which was a little over 2 weeks ago, the president has picked up momentum. I think when you see Joe Biden going to places like Michigan and Minnesota in the last couple of days, states that we were told before were out of play, that tells you they're seeing something there, too. So I'm not predicting one way or the other tonight. But what I will say to you is the one thing I will predict is that this idea it's going to be an 8 or 10 point race for Joe Biden, I think are dead wrong. I think it's going to be a close race.
So if it's close and things go, how does it work? Because, you know, Canadians are just, they're still appreciating the Electoral College. Donald Trump has made this argument that you got to know the result on election night. That's not how the American system works. As you know, it's whoever, you know, you got to count the votes and that's the system. What could happen here? There's lots of mail-in ballots. Pennsylvania, Florida, other places might be counting well past tomorrow night. Are you foreseeing a count that could go on? And if that happens, could there be a period of instability, Chris Christie?
Well, let's contrast Florida and Pennsylvania since you brought up those two states. Florida's already begun counting and sorting on all their mail-in ballots, and they've had early voting, which they've processed. They've processed probably close to 6 million ballots already. About 8 million ballots have already been received. And so we'll know Florida tomorrow night. Pennsylvania is different because the Pennsylvania Supreme Court changed the rules about a month ago and gave people an extra 3 days to return their ballots. So if it comes down to Pennsylvania, which it very well might, then you're going to be waiting probably till the end of the week to get a result. As far as instability, I think that's going to depend on the two candidates. If they conduct themselves in a way that's appropriate and smart, I don't think there will be instability. If anybody starts to get out of hand, then we have more to worry about.
You look, you've been a governor for 8 years. You know this. Donald Trump has said there's going to be massive voter fraud. He's talked about, 50,000 ballots in a river. That's not true. He said there's big mail voter fraud. There's been no real evidence of that. He sowed the seeds of a lot of distrust with the electoral system, Chris Christie. First of all, is that fair? There's very little evidence of that. And why is he doing it?
Well, first off, there's very little evidence of it because we've never had this type of broad mail-in voting before in our country. We just haven't. I mean, in my state, for instance, you're going to have 10 to 12 times the number of mail-in ballots than you have in a normal election. That's very different. And in my state, we have sent a ballot to every registered voter. The normal process here is you have to request a mail-in ballot. Now there's ballots out there. So it's a much different system. And I think it's a false narrative to say, well, we've never had this before, so therefore the president's not being truthful. The fact of the matter is we've never had broad mail-in voting before. We've had it in isolated states, four or five states that have a mail-in voting system.
That's a very different message, though, Chris Christie, than saying there's going to be mail fraud. You're right. There's never been voting in this numbers. But the idea that, therefore, there's mass fraud on this is a totally illogical conclusion. It's a speculation at best.
I think the right way to say it is it's been presented much more opportunity for fraud. When you have people out there who are getting ballots who haven't asked for them, many people I know, for instance, there's a woman in my neighborhood who got two ballots. She got one under her maiden name and one under her married name. Now, she's got two ballots. Now, you would hope if she only will fill in one, and if that she did fill in two, that they'd catch it. But I think the way to best put the point, the way I would put the point is that there's much more opportunity for it, given that we've done this on the fly. My state, for instance, is not prepared to count these ballots that quickly. They never had this many mail-in ballots, and the machinery of counting is much less. So, listen, all that stuff is stuff the president's talked about. It's a bit of a sideshow. But in the end, what's going to happen is the votes will be counted, and we will have a winner. And when we do, the winner will claim victory, and the loser will concede defeat.
Right. To be fair, so I don't know about the anecdotal evidence. There's always going to be some, as you and I both know. In the end, someone who got two ballots, there is a system to check that. Let me ask you, because you were part of the prep team for the debates, the closing argument for Donald Trump, he's essentially running against the coronavirus, saying, it's not, no one's going to talk about it after November 4th. You know that's not true. Cases are surging there. You've had it, unfortunately, and it's good to see you healthy, by the way, sir. He's also now talked about maybe firing Dr. Fauci. Why is he doing that? I mean, you've been with the president. Can you just pull back the curtain? Does anyone not say to him, hey, that's pretty dangerous stuff? You're literally contradicting all the medical advice you're getting.
Believe me, the president has gotten, from me and from others, robust advice that oftentimes disagrees with what he wants to do. In the end, he's the president. He's the candidate. He makes the decisions about what he wants to talk about. I would say, though, that it's a little unfair of a characterization to say his campaign is running against the coronavirus. He's done a great deal to help control the coronavirus in this country. But on top of that, he's also talking about Joe Biden's position on the oil and gas industry, Joe Biden's position on taxes, and Joe Biden's position on the Green New Deal and all that could cost this country in terms of tax money and economic development. So there's a lot that's been discussed by the president in all this. I think if you look at who's focused on COVID in this race, it's been Vice President Biden. Now, it is a hugely important issue in our country.
I mean, there's 230,000 dead Americans, and the economy's been trounced around the world by it. I mean, look, you're 100% right. Are there other issues? Yes. But is the pandemic critical? Yes.
My point is that there are other issues that need to be discussed as well. I believe we'll have a vaccine by the end of the year. I believe that vaccine will be widely distributed in the first quarter of 2021, and that America and the rest of the world by mid-2021 we'll get back to a greater sense of normalcy because of the extraordinary job that the American pharmaceutical industry has done to develop these vaccines in tremendously historic speed.
Right.
But we also have to talk about how do we rebuild that economy from the pandemic and the issue of taxes and regulation and spending and energy are all going to be a part of that. So when the pandemic ends, the president, whoever it is going to have a plan to rebuild our economy in this country, because if the American economy is not going well, that's going to be bad for Canada and every other country around the world.
Yeah, listen, I 100% agree with you, although we're not there yet, as you know better than anybody. We're in it. Just before I let you go, Governor Christie, a lot of people are saying, if Donald Trump doesn't win, will there be a peaceful transition of power? He's asked that a lot, kind of ducks it. I get on a campaign trail, you never want to hypothesize about losing, but you know this guy well. Do you believe he would follow critical conventions in the United States and have a peaceful transition of power for those months between this election result and the next inauguration?
There's no question in my mind that President Trump will participate in a peaceful transition of power if he does not win tomorrow night. And I believe that Vice President Biden will participate in making sure that the Democratic Party accepts the results of the election tomorrow night if President Trump is reelected. They're both responsible men. They both will act in concert with what our traditions are in this country. And quite frankly, members of the Republican Party and Democratic Party, leaders like myself and others, will make sure that that happens.
Yeah, well, we hope so. I tell you, from Canada point of view, you know, as a former governor of New Jersey, big economic relationship. Canada's been mystified at things like tariffs on steel and aluminum. And that, I'm sure, when you were an advisor, did you ever push back against those tariffs against a country like Canada saying this is not helping?
Listen, I'll tell you what I believe. What I believe is we live in the best neighborhood in the world, that America is in the best neighborhood of the world with our Canadian brothers and sisters to the north and our Mexican brothers and sisters to the south. We live in the safest, most prosperous, best neighborhood anywhere in the world. No one else would want to live in a better neighborhood than we do. And we should be doing things every day to make sure that people on both sides of that American border, in Canada and in Mexico, are prospering and doing well also. And that's the way I've always approached that question and the way I think America will approach that question as we all work to get out of the economic distress caused by the pandemic.
Hey, come on back anytime, Governor Christie. Great to have you on the program. I appreciate it.
I'm looking forward to coming back after the election and we can see how wrong I might have been.
Well, you know what? It's politics. You never predict the future, but I'm glad to see you're healthy and always good to have you up here in Canada. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
All right, that's Governor Chris Christie on the election tomorrow. CTV News will have extensive coverage of Election Day, of course, in the U.S. CTV News, the American Election 2020, begins on CTV News Channel at 7 p.m. Eastern. And at ctvnews.ca, coverage begins on the main CTV News network, main CTV network, not the news network, at 8 p.m. Eastern with, of course, our chief anchor and senior editor, Lisa LaFlamme. She'll guide you through the night, bring you the results and the reaction live as events unfold, and I'll be part of that great team joining Lisa. Coming up, the final push.
You have the power, with your vote, to save the American dream, to save our country from what could happen to it.
We can put an end to this presidency that is from the very beginning sought to divide us, to tear us apart.
Where are Trump and Biden focusing their efforts in the last day of the campaign? CTV Washington Bureau Chief Joy Malvin gives us the latest next. Stay right here with Power Play. Welcome back to Power Play. So time is ticking in the final hours of the U.S. election campaign. Here's a live look now at Mike Pence. He's campaigning in Michigan, Traverse City, Michigan. Donald Trump is about to be introduced there, Michigan battleground state. Joe Biden and Trump are keeping the pressure on these key battleground states like Michigan, like Pennsylvania, like Florida. Nearly 100 million voters have already cast their ballot. That's massive. But what should we expect to see tomorrow? Let's bring in CTV News Washington Bureau Chief Joy Malbon right now. Joy, the Trump-Biden campaigns are obviously they're hitting these battleground states. Midnight, right up to the final hour. What states are you watching that you could tell our viewers, hey, these are what you got to focus on?
Well, first of all, I got to tell you, there's a lot of anxiety here. 4 years ago, we thought no way would there be a President Trump. And now we're asking, can he pull it off again? Can he pull off that magic? Now, he does have a narrow path. And what I'm going to be watching, some of the states that, well, we're actually going to find out what the votes will be. I'm going to be looking at Florida right away. If Donald Trump wins Florida, and it's always a squeaker, as we well know, he's on his way. A narrow path, given that. But then I would start looking at some of the Great Lakes states, the Michigans, the Wisconsins, and especially Pennsylvania. That could be the tipping point. But again, some of those states we may not know for a few days because of early voting, and early voting was allowed because of the pandemic. And that's why you've seen such a surge of people coming out because of COVID, but also because of enthusiasm. A lot of people are motivated to get out there and vote.
Man, it is massive early voting. And I just want people to say there'll be a surge for the probably on the Trump side tomorrow, because more Biden people vote and Democrats vote early, and probably more Republicans and Trump supporters will vote tomorrow. So there's going to be a seesaw. Now, you're in D.C., and I saw the tweet, storefronts are boarding up. Clearly, there are some security concerns, Joy, although Chris Christie, the former governor, just told me he's not concerned. Clearly, people are concerned. What are you seeing?
A lot of store owners are concerned. We saw a lot of places boarding up, much like what we saw during the summer when there were protests in the summer, racial reckoning, racial injustice. But a lot of those boards came down. It's just there is this anxiety, this uncertainty, fear out there that there could be civil unrest. And you've seen some of this, some of the voter intimidation, the Trump supporters in Texas that nearly ran a Biden campaign bus off the road. The FBI is now investigating that. And Donald Trump, he seems to stoke these divisions. He called them great patriots. So there is this fear out there. You know, when I walk around, I think, wait a second here. You know, this only happens in places like Florida. You board up for hurricanes and tornadoes. But in recent memory, I've never seen anything like it, where storefronts and businesses are taking these precautions because they're afraid that this election could cause civil unrest.
And never seen anything like it. Hurricane democracy. People are boarding up stores for democracy, a vote in the United States of America. President Trump unleashed on Dr. Fauci earlier today. Fauci, of course, has criticized the pandemic response, but he's alluded to the fact he could fire Fauci. What's the latest?
This is Donald Trump. You know, he's just stoking divisions. You know, when you listen to his rallies, it's a great stage show. And it's all the greatest hits from Crooked Hillary and Lock Her Up and the chants about that. I mean, today he was attacking Joe Biden. He's attacking Lady Gaga, of all people, because she's showing up for Joe Biden, attacking just about everybody. But last night in Florida, he talked about Dr. Fauci, because his strategy all along has been to tell Americans, look, the pandemic is over. We're rounding the curve. We've got vaccines. Look at me. I'm fine. You know, we've got therapeutics coming. Don't worry. Be happy. Mm-hmm. That is his strategy when it comes to COVID. But then, you know, he said, well, you know, the crowd started chanting, fire Fauci, fire Fauci. And he kind of mused a little bit and he said, well, maybe I'll do that, but we'll wait till the election. But good advice, he said. Now, he can't fire Fauci, but he could probably kick him off the task force, the White House task force that is, but, you know, it's practically dormant anyway. It hasn't met in so long. And part of the reason why he's angry at Fauci is because of diametrically opposed visions of what this pandemic is all about. Fauci saying, look, we're in a whole world of hurt. And you got Donald Trump saying, hey, don't worry, it's over.
Yeah, and it's not. But we'll find out what the American people have to say about this tomorrow night. And Joy will be part of our coverage as well. Joy, stay safe. Fascinating story coming to a head tomorrow. Maybe not to a head. Maybe the next couple months it will take. Joy Malbon in Washington. Now, you just probably heard a lot of talk recently about one candidate winning the popular vote, but losing the election. That's what happened with Hillary Clinton in 2016. Some say that could happen to Joe Biden again. So how does that actually work? How do you win the popular vote but lose an election? Well, in the United States, the person with the most votes, if you're the president, doesn't actually win the race. That's because they have something called the Electoral College. So what exactly is the Electoral College? Well, to elect the president and the vice president, every state is assigned a number of Electoral College votes, which are represented by electors. There are 538 of them. That corresponds to the number of Senate and Congress people, plus three more for Washington, D.C. Electoral College electors, they're usually party insiders. For example, Hillary Clinton is an elector for the state of New York. And whichever candidate wins a certain state, they win all that state's electoral votes. The margin of the win doesn't matter. The winner takes all the state votes in the Electoral College. So take a look at a map. Some states have as few as three. Others have more than 50. Those are the big prize states. There they are. Look at that map. So you see Florida's got 29. California's got 55. Those are big states. Texas, 38. As we said, there are a total of 538 electors across the U.S. So the winner needs to at least have 270 to win the White House. 270. That is the magic number. You'll hear that a lot tomorrow. So as we saw in 2016, a candidate can win the popular vote, all those people in California, for example, but lose the Electoral College. That means they lose the presidency. They didn't have a good distribution of votes. That has happened five times. And as you're saying, this is 2016, the breakdown. The Electoral College only impacts who wins the presidency and the vice presidency, so it doesn't determine the state's representative or the senator. So at the end of the day, the Electoral College is the name of the game. But of course, as you can tell, it's very controversial because voters in populous states like California clearly have less influence than, say, a voter in Wisconsin or North Dakota. But that is the system, which has been widely seen as unfair, but it is still in play in 2020, which is why all eyes are on that minimum 270 electoral votes to win the election, and why the race comes down to those few key states that we keep talking about. All right, before we head to a break, here's some other news you need to know right now. We've got the latest on COVID-19 in this country. The back and forth of Ontario's COVID-19 cases continues today. That province is reporting a slight decrease in cases, 748 new infections. That's down from 977 reported yesterday. Toronto accounts for most of the infections, 315. Peel region has 261, while Ottawa and the York region have 64 cases each. The province also added seven deaths, so the number of tests completed also dramatically dropped. Just 27,000 tests were conducted. To be fair, fewer people are going for tests because of a change in protocol. But Manitoba is in bad shape. It's adding 241 new cases of COVID-19, and Winnipeg officially enters code red, or a critical level on the province's pandemic response scale. The move will mean restaurants in Winnipeg, bars in Winnipeg are closed to eat-in dining, and other venues like theaters and sports venues must cease operation. Despite testing capacity rising by 40% in the past 2 weeks, Manitoba Premier Brian Pallister says the province has lost its way in the battle against COVID-19, and he's urging Manitobans to reduce their contacts by 75% and is set up to ramp up enforcement on group gatherings. The Premier is also mulling the idea of introducing a curfew. Check this out.
We're giving serious consideration to implementing a curfew that would be designed to restrict travel between key hours when gathering sizes tend to be dangerously in excess of the rules, late night hours, obviously. These late night situations in Winnipeg have expanded our number of COVID cases very significantly. According to Dr. Rusin, this is an action that we should seriously consider, and I am seriously considering it now. I want Manitobans to tell us what they think of the idea of a limited period curfew. We hope very short.
The number of new infections in Quebec are also up again. The province is reporting 1,037 new COVID-19 cases along with one new death. This is an increase from Sunday, where that province saw 965 infections. The number of cases has been wavering between about 900 and 1,000 for the better part of a week. Montreal's numbers are the highest in the province, with 224. Coming up, though, the push to the polls.
The great red wave is going to come over the next little while. It's coming. It's building. This is going to be a wave like nobody's ever seen before.
We can put an end to a presidency that fanned the flames of hate, poured gasoline on every opportunity he had.
Is the post-election fallout going to be more nasty than the actual campaign? The press gallery is going to weigh in with what you should look for. The former U.S. ambassador to Canada, Bruce Hayman, drops in. Stay with us.
Last night, on his COVID spreader tour, he's going around spreading COVID. He's like a carrier because he cares more about having big crowds than he does about keeping people safe. He told his supporters, don't tell anybody, but he's going to fire Dr. Fauci after the election. Don't boo. Vote.
Okay, there's campaigning down to the wire, hours to go in the U.S. election. Trump and Biden and surrogates like Barack Obama are in a frantic closing race to swing key states like Florida and Pennsylvania, get out the vote. Donald Trump's closing message has been a cocktail of doubt, fear, and possible hope. He claims it will be mass fraud. There's not a lot of evidence of that. He says his lawyers will be brought into key battleground states to review the mail-in results. He says the outcome has to be decided tomorrow night, which, of course, is not how the system works. But he says the economy's turned around and that he promises big riches if he's reelected. Biden is also campaigning on a lot of fear. If Trump is elected, he says America will lose its character. The pandemic will be worse. But what happens if the outcome isn't clear? What if the transition of power isn't smooth? How are international leaders like Prime Minister Trudeau preparing for any outcome? There's a lot at stake. So let's bring in the press gallery to discuss all this. Tana McCharles is a reporter with the Toronto Star here in Ottawa. Yeah. Ian Bailey is a reporter with the Globe. He's in Vancouver. Our special guest is former U.S. Ambassador to Canada, Bruce Hayman. Great to see all of you. And now, Bruce, I know you're clearly in the Joe Biden camp. You've been working for him. But we just talked to Governor Chris Christie, who, of course, has been a Trump advisor. He says Trump has closed the gap. It's going to be a very tight race. What are you expecting?
I'm expecting a very significant victory for the vice president. I think these early vote totals have created such a gap for the Democrats that it's going to be very, very difficult for Donald Trump to close that gap. And Joe Biden has expanded the map. He's looking at Ohio. He's looking at Georgia. He's looking at North Carolina. He's looking at Texas. He's looking at Arizona. Where Donald Trump's on defense, trying to hold on to a couple of states that he had. His path right now is very narrow, and I anticipate it's going to be a very good night for the Democrats tomorrow.
Well, Donda, they anticipated a good night in 2016. They had a very bad night. You know, Ambassador Hayman's right about a lot of things, but in key states like Pennsylvania and Florida, those are toss-ups. Those could be gateways to the Trump victory. What are you looking for?
Right. And I mean, everybody, I think, hopes for a quick result or at least, a clear result early. But look, it's certainly in the government. The Liberal government is looking at that. And it's certainly in their plans that they may not have a clear result Tuesday night, Wednesday, Thursday. It may take a couple of days before some of those very key states are basically known what the outcome is. So they're planning for all eventualities. But I think what you'll see is you won't see a clear statement from the Trudeau government until you see a clear result in the U.S. They are going to be very careful, and all of their people, all their ministers have been instructed not to rush to any judgments, no jumping to conclusions, because, you know, they may have to deal with Trump after this. Notwithstanding what Bruce is saying, you know, I think everybody's still a little skittish at the Liberal seat of power up there. They're all like wondering, well, it happened in 2016, so what's going on?
Yeah, I talked to Ian. I talked to someone in the PMO source today, and they're like, our goal is stay out of the way. We can't control any of this. We don't want to be part of the story. In terms of an impact on Canada, Ian, I mean, Joe Biden also has some potential impact on Canada, and there's border issues. What are you looking for, Ian?
Well, you know, I'm first off, I got to say that I'm really relieved to have this this situation coming to an end, to have it be one sleep away from some kind of resolution. That's mean a lot of stress. The the pollsters have provided some sense of what might happen, and I've gone with that flow. But then I remember Dewey defeats Truman in 1948, and of course the last election with Miss Clinton. So we'll know, I hope, tomorrow which way this is going, even if we don't have a full result. As for Mr. Biden, there are always irritants between Canada and the United States. You just look back at the history. Perhaps Mr. Biden will bring some, if he wins, will bring some predictability. If Mr. Trump is reelected, I guess the federal government knows how to deal with the Trump administration. So there's that. I would say one thing. Here in British Columbia, we look south of us. We see Washington State. Very harrowing situation with COVID. If there is a change in government, there may be a new approach. There's not going to be some resolution of the COVID crisis in the United States overnight, but perhaps something down the horizon, perhaps the beginning of the end, instead of the uncertain situation we're going through now.
Look,
First of all, let me just say, Ian, you look phenomenal right now. If you remember Dewey Truman of 1948, you are looking as good as anybody, because I certainly don't remember 1948 Dewey Truman. So good for you, man. You're doing something,
it's
right.
It's the Bruce water, Eamon, heaven, and the sun out here.
Yeah, man, that Vancouver is great. Dewey Truman, he remembers that. Hey, Heyman, are you expecting or looking at any potential period of instability between tomorrow night, if we don't know a final result, and, you know, the months of that interregnum period between the next inauguration? Because there's a lot of worry. Stores are boarding up. Walmart's pulling guns and bullets off the shelf. Are you worried about that?
I'm definitely worried about it, especially when you have a sitting president who is encouraging the activities that we've seen not only the last few months, but the last few days with these folks that were trying to drive off the Biden-Harris campaign bus in Texas, with the comments that he's made, you know, about the governor of Michigan, with his support of this violent shooting from this Illinois young man who went to Wisconsin to shoot and kill some people. Look, he is a very dangerous man, and there is still a period of time where he'll be president, even if Joe Biden wins, as I expect. You know, there's still a period of time where he has, you know, his hands on the levers of power and decision making. The second thing is, I totally agree that we could not have a decision tomorrow night. I still think it'll be a good night going into it, but a number of these states had such large amounts of vote by mail, it will take them a while, especially in these Midwestern swing states. It'll take them a while to process them.
And, you know, if I could just jump in there, Evan, further to what both Ian and Bruce are saying, I mean, I think the Liberal government here is also acknowledging that even if there is a Biden win, that presents challenges for them, for Canada's energy sector, and insofar as their Buy American policy goes. But they also recognize that any government, be it Trump, be it Biden, in fact, is going to be caught up with the pandemic and dealing with the pandemic for a long time, several months. So even though Trump doesn't have a platform and Biden does, at the end of the day, they are months away from confronting some of the other big challenges that are enumerated there.
And going back to
I totally agree. Okay, guys, let me just take a break.
Sure.
Hang on, Ian. Let me come back to you. I want to take a break and stick around. Ian, Bruce, Ambassador Heyman, and Tonda. We're going to also bring in Nick Nanos, because I think all of us have raised this question. Can you trust the polls? It was a different story in 2016. Have the pollsters made a change? Nick Nanos is going to jump in next. So let's take a break. We'll be right back. America goes to the polls tomorrow, but polls have been the subject of a lot of controversy. Look, if there's been one steady thing in the past few months, apparently it's Joe Biden standing in the polls. Here's a look at him campaigning. He's doing this right now in Pittsburgh. This is a live shot of him. Donald Trump's in Michigan. Most show Joe Biden several points ahead of Donald Trump, depending on the poll, even in some of the tight battleground states. But of course, we've seen this before. In 2016, Hillary Clinton was sitting comfortably ahead on election night, and she lost. And Ian Bailey, our panelist, remembers Dewey Truman of 1948. Will the polls this year better reflect the sentiment? have the pollsters made changes. The press gallery's back. Tonda McCharles is here from the Toronto Star. Ian Bailey with the Globe and Mail. Amazing. And our guest speaker, of course, is U.S. Ambassador to Canada, Bruce Hayman. I'm never going to let that go, Ian. And our CTV News pollster from Nanos, the CEO of Nanos, Nick Nanos, is here. Nick, I'll start with you on this. When the polls were wrong in 2016, there's a lot of nervous folks out there. What did pollsters get wrong last time, and what have they done to fix it this time?
Well, what they got wrong was transferring things to the Electoral College. The national polls in 2016 were right. They predicted Hillary Clinton would win the popular support. She did. But the state polls and the conversion of state polls into the Electoral College didn't work. That's the Achilles heel that we have right now. All of the national polls are fairly consistent. They show Joe Biden to win the national popular support. That's going to happen. I can predict that with 100% certainty. But when we get into some of these states, it's a little more of a toss-up. So how big a win for Biden is the big question mark for tomorrow.
Yeah, and just let me just one more for you, Nick, because last time pollsters overpolled college-educated Americans, but not a lot of people who weren't, who don't often participate in polls. Apparently, they've changed that. But the mail-in ballots that Bruce Hayman was talking about, there's tens of millions of mail-in ballots at a rate we've never seen. Are mail-in ballots a factor that could also destabilize polling?
Well, actually, I think the mail-in ballots are going to be stabilizing because people have already voted. When they get polled, they'll say how they're doing. The big question is, tomorrow, what will be the voter turnout? Will it be higher than in 2016? Or is this whole pandemic just cannibalizing one type of voting, mail and advance polling, advance voting for in-person? I think that's going to be the big question. If we see a level of turnout that is anything higher than it was in 2016, that's probably going to be indicative of a big Biden win. If Biden in the popular support is only ahead by 3 or 4 percentage points, then it's going to be a little more up in the air.
Bruce, there's two factors here. The pandemic, and it looks like Republican voters are more likely to show up at the polls tomorrow. And the other issue, of course, is voter suppression tactics. Does that play out as a factor in the vote tomorrow?
Sure. These voter suppression tactics are well known by the Republicans because they don't have the same number of supporters. So how do they do it? They get all their people to turn out and they try their hardest to suppress the vote of the Democrats. Well, they're getting turned away by a lot of courts here recently. And so decisions are not falling in their favor. They're really stretching and throwing stuff against the wall just to see what'll stick. And it won't surprise me if the president tries to do that tomorrow night, if in fact things are as close or tight as, you know, some fear. But my feeling is that the numbers of people that are coming out and engaging, we're seeing unbelievable turnout in youth. We could have between 150, 60, maybe more million people voting in the United States, which will be a record. And we could get close to an all-time record percentage of Americans voting. Donald Trump and his craziness have caused democracy to engage, and people are responding.
Well, you know, and I would just say that I think this is something that the Trudeau government is also kind of relying on at this point. I mean, they're justifying their unwillingness to speak out early because they say we have faith in the American democracy system and in the institutions to look after the right to vote and the right to express and the enfranchisement of voters who've previously been disenfranchised. So I think that's very top of mind for them. And I think, you know, Bruce makes a good point. I think actually if it turns out to add to the clarity of the result, that will make everyone's night.
Evan, there's one other thing that's happening.
Something that Governor... Sorry?
Go ahead.
Yeah, Governor Christie's point earlier in the show about, if it's a Trump defeat, counseling the president to do the right thing and other Republicans perhaps raises some hope for party elders leading to this thing to a conclusion if it goes against the incumbent president, which is an interesting point, I think.
Yeah, so Bruce, you wanted to weigh back in.
In 2016, there was the shy Trump voter, the person who did not want to say they were voting for Trump, but went in and actually voted for Trump. Today, I think there's the shy Biden voter. And a lot of people in the Republican ranks, a lot of women in suburban, Republican areas, a lot of people who are moderates are going to vote for Joe Biden, but they're not going to tell their friends and they're not going to tell their husband or spouse or partner. They're going to be shy about it because of fear of retribution by their own community.
Nick, is that a factor?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, the biggest factor is who shows up to vote. Actually, in 2016 was a massive failure for the Democratic pollsters and group of pollsters in modeling who was going to turn up. That's why Hillary Clinton went to the wrong states in the last week of that campaign. But it's all going to come down to who shows up. The other thing, how about this for a prediction? I think the early returns are going to show a tighter race, and there'll be grumpiness in terms of the accuracy of the polls. And it'll take a number of days before we find out how accurate or inaccurate the polls are because of all those mail-in ballots that have to be tabulated.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that may be the case as well because it may be a surge. Ian, just last thing, any, you know, speaking to sources in the PMO about the border's already closed because of the pandemic, essentially. Any concerns from the Canadian side about the border, Ian?
Certainly concerns here in British Columbia, as I was saying earlier. No one wants to see that border reopened until the United States sorts things out with their with the COVID situation there. And that may take a very long time. But again, perhaps tomorrow may mark the beginning of a new approach. So we'll have to see how that works out. But yeah, I mean, at least here, that's sort of west of the Rockies, no one wants to see that border opened anytime soon.
Imagine that. No one wants to see the border open. What a change. Ian Bailey, Tawna McCharles, Ambassador Bruce Hayman, pollster Nick Nanos. Guys, it's going to be quite a night tomorrow. So get your sleep tonight because there will not be a lot of sleep tomorrow. Thanks so much. Great to have the four of you on. And CTV
Thanks
News will have extensive coverage of Election Day in the U.S. CTV News, the American Election 2020, begins on CTV News Channel at 7 p.m. Eastern and ctvnews.ca. Coverage begins on the main CTV network at 8 p.m. Eastern. Our chief anchor and senior editor, Lisa Laflamme, will guide you through the night, bringing you the results and the reaction live as events unfold. That is going to be a fun night. And that is your Power Play Day in politics. Are you ready? It is going to be fascinating. U.S. elections are fascinating, this one more so than ever. Thanks for watching today. We'll be back here in 23 short hours. Get your sleep, hug your loved ones if it's safe to do so. And thanks for watching.